Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nimco.
Organization. It's kind of a word that gave me the willies when I was a kid. I thought I'd lose my creativity if I was too organized. It was cooler to be have a little bit of chaos in my life. And some people can get away with it, absolutely. Some of the smartest, most productive people I know have desks that are tornadoes. But many people do struggle with organization. They may have gotten away with it in school. With grade inflation, it's not so easy, you know, it's not so hard to get a good grade, even if you are chaotic and cram the last second and can't find what you need or whatever. But in our ever more demanding work world, it may not be so easy to get away with it. So I thought I would devote the first segment of this show to coming up with approaches to being disorganized. And the more I thought about it, the more I researched the literature, the more I realized that one size does not fit all, as with most things. Disorganization is kind of like a headache. It's the symptom, but it's not the disease. Just as a headache could be a brain tumor or migraine or tension or whatever, somebody can hit you over the head. Same is true with organization. So I started to make a list of as many of the different causes of disorganization as I could, and then came up with a solution. A solution is a little too strong a word. I think these self-help gurus and the like are just too, you know, black and white. Do this is the magic pill. None of these are magic pills. The older I get, the more I've been career counselor, folks, I realize that we're just, you know, it's kind of like high blood pressure. You can't cure it, but you can manage it. So think of these as individualized ways to get organized depending upon what the cause of your disorganization is. And I'll invite you to call in with your personalized disorganization problem and see if we can come up with a customized solution. But first of all, most foundationally, there are a lot of people who decide that being organized just isn't worth the effort. If you think your life sucks and you believe that being organized isn't really going to be like rearranging the deck chairs in the Titanic, you just figure, hell with it. It's not worth the effort. The reality is that maybe before you start, the cure for that would be to take a look at how, obviously if you have stage 4 cancer, that isn't a whole lot you can do. But generally, there is some little baby step that makes life worth living. So if your career really sucks, you might start by saying, well, okay, let me see if I can look through a directory of a bunch of careers and see if maybe something is more realistic or it's more exciting. Or maybe your relationships have always sucked, so maybe you want to say, okay, what the hell do I need to do differently so that maybe my next relationship is going to be a little better. So sometimes before you can get organized or care enough to be organized, you got to take baby steps toward improving your life so you feel like it's worth getting organized. So that's one. Two, a lot of people disorganize because they're distractible. You know, they're all over the map. You know, obviously, at some level, ADHD medications, attention deficit hyperdisorder medications, can work for a lot of people. I'm amazed that, again, in my review of the literature, for about 70-80% of people, ADHD medication works well if you meet the criteria for ADHD. You know, that you are not just highly distractible, but distractible under circumstances that, you know, even you like. I mean, obviously, anybody's going to be distracted in a boring university lecture. But if you're distractible at most things and find yourself you just can't stay focused, that it may be at least worth seeing a physician start by going on the internet and look at there are all these self-assessments for what are the characteristics. And it's not all or none. It's a continuum. See whether you fit. And if the self-assessment makes you feel like you fit the definition of ADHD, you know, obviously don't self-medicate, but then that gives you enough reason to at least go see a doctor or a specialist in ADHD and see if it's worth a trial in medication. That can make you much less distractible. Beyond the drugs, of course, there are things, you know, moving to where there are less distractions. Wear earplugs. Add little cardboard walls to your cubicle side. Or block out hours for work where you're less likely to be distracted. There aren't the TV shows you want to watch or family isn't around or whatever. or just simply, you know, indulge some of your distractions, for, at least for only brief amounts of time. That doesn't mean 6 hours of video games. So distractibility is another cause of disorganization. And, you know, maybe your solution may be in that rather than simply, you know, the kind of behavioral solutions, which are like Julie Morgenstern, the famous author of Organizing from the Inside Out, says, for example, well, start in the room that you're most frequently using if your house is a tornado and disorganized. Start in the room that you most frequently use and start in one little corner of that room. That kind of tactic can work, and it does work for a lot of people, but not for all. And that's why I'm trying to be a little more nuanced here and come up with different approaches to disorganization, depending upon its cause. Another cause of disorganization is poor memory. If you've got poor memory, then, you know, religious and frankly, to be honest, my pot-smoking clients, of course, if you're in their 70s or 80s, you tend not to have as good a memory. But there are many of my longtime pot-smokers who in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who have terrible memories. Even if they stop using it, it doesn't all come back, apparently. And I do think the research literature supports that notion. But in any case, whatever your reason for poor memory, make a habit, a real habit, of writing your to-dos on a list. And key, a lot of people have to-do lists, but they don't check it frequently enough. Check it frequently. You might say aloud the things you really need to remember, that multi-sensory approach, the, you know, both the auditory and the visual may help you remember. And also, memory is inhibited if you don't get enough sleep. You know, everybody needs, you know, even if you're older, you need 6.5, 7 hours of sleep. And if you're older, you know, if you're younger, you need 8 hours, some as many as 9. And so, you know, practice basic sleep hygiene. Make sure the room is cool. Don't get overstimulated before you go to bed. Although sex is fine before you go to bed, that actually makes you want to sleep. You know, have a pre-bedtime ritual. So doing the same thing every day is calming. And then I really like, this is really helps me. After my long day of work, when I hit my head hits the pillow, I say, okay, Martin, you've worked hard today. You now deserve to free your mind of everything. And as soon as something scary or yucky comes into my brain, I just tune out and I think about the most pleasant thoughts, which unfortunately for me, I love to think about eating. So I think about what I'll eat tomorrow or gardening. I think about my garden. I go around my garden in my mind and rate all the plants, and I find myself going to sleep and staying asleep. Okay. Another cause for disorganization could be you simply don't know how to figure out how to organize stuff. So if, you know, start with a you know, some Google some article on getting organized, or read Julie Morgenstern's articles or books on getting organized from the inside as well as the outside. It mentions the psychological stuff as well as the practical tactics. Or ask an organized person to help you set up a system. Or if you've got this huge, big project and you can't figure out how to break it up into baby steps, find somebody who's good at that. I got a lot more, but I'd like to now open the phones and invite you to call. If you are disorganized, or someone you care about is disorganized, I invite you to call here at Work with Marty Nemko and KALW. I'll try to help you. The phone number, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Some other causes of disorganization and approaches to it. Some people just have an inability to prioritize. So sometimes it helps to create a personal mission statement. You know, that can, you know, that little slogan can help you rate a task's priority. Is that task important? Is it urgent? Is it both important and urgent, or neither? My personal mission statement is to use my best skills, it's writing and speaking on the off the cuff, to try to make a difference in people's career and their personal life and their education and reform education. That can sometimes help you prioritize. Another cause of disorganization is some people just thrive on chaos. So maybe you do. And, you know, we all pay prices for different things. I'm 15, 20 pounds overweight. I'm sure I'm going to pay a price for that down the road. I haven't yet, but, you know, I can't seem to control my eating. So that's just part of the cost of our being human, and we do different things. Maybe you're somebody who says the benefit of chaos is worth, you know, living with it. Or you decide that, you know, damn it, I developed that habit when I was in school, and it worked then, but as I said at the top of the show, it's not working now. So I've got to go and get organized. Or maybe you know, decide, you know, I'm going to work in a less demanding job where I can get away with being chaotic. You know, as I also said, it's really, there are many people who believe that being disorganized and chaotic makes them more creative. I'm not quite convinced that that causal link is there. In fact, if you're not having to worry about where stuff is, your mind is freer to be creative. Many people, especially here in the Bay Area, choose unconsciously to be disorganized because they resent authority. They say, you know what, the system wants me to be, you know, lockstep and dress a certain way and be neat and have everything organized. That's not me. Screw the system. So, you know, again, we all make our choices. If you feel that's living your values and that's what you want to do, that's fine, but, you know, you're going to pay a price. But all I'm asking you to do is be conscious of it and realize that, you know, bring it to consciousness and say, screw it, I hate the system, I want to be disorganized, I want to, I, you know, it just feels aesthetically and socioeconomically and politically right to not be neat. I like Bernie Sanders because he's not buttoned up, he's rumpled, and I like that. Fine. But I want you to make the choice consciously because very often we pay a pretty big price for disorganization. Some people simply feel that being organized, and this is a corollary of the previous one, is a sign of being grown up, and they're not ready. A lot of people, they may have graduated college, but they feel they're not ready to be grown up. They want to be a kid for a while longer. They want to be irresponsible. And being organized and having systems and all the rest of it is kind of a sign of being kind of grown up, and they're not ready to be yet. So, again, I want you to just bring it to consciousness. Do you feel you need to be more grown up? Or is it fine at this stage in your life to say, the hell with it, I'll worry about neatening my closet and my apartment and my desk or my work space. I'll do that later. I'm not ready for that yet. Sometimes it's more simplistic. Sometimes it's simply a lack of a formal organization system. You might want to try Google Calendar or a pencil and paper engagement calendar or apps. There's a ton of apps for organization. Or simply write your to-dos on a Microsoft Word file. Or even, and this will give professional organizers the willies, just on little pieces of paper on your desk. I got to be honest with you. That's all I do. All I have is a little, these little 3x3, a little pad of 3x3 paper. And I, you know, keep an ongoing running list of the things I need to do that I won't automatically remember without having to write them down. And I'm looking at that list all day, every day. Also, yes, I do have an appointment calendar that I have for all my clients, of course. But I've got these anomalous things that I have to do right then. Like, for example, I decided I wanted to, my waiting area in my living room, my clients, this guy highly trafficked. In the wet winter, there was dirt all over the trafficked area. So I put on my list and say, okay, you know, spot clean the traffic area of my living room rug. So I just keep a list like that. It feels good to cross the stuff off. But whatever, there's some people who are much more thorough. Everything's on their Google Calendar or on their apps. But maybe, you know, that's another reason that some people are disorganized. They lack a formal organization system and they need one. And as I implied earlier, said earlier, you know, you can have the greatest organization system in the world. I remember back in the 80s when people were carrying these day timers, these fat things. They had carried them, but they didn't use them. You know, you've got to look at it all the time. Hoarders. That's a whole other category. There are some people who disorganize because they just can't bear to part with items. It comes from a sort of perfectionism that makes almost impossible their ability to choose what to toss and what to keep. They're afraid they'll be bereft without those items. Some of those people are also, they have a big emotional hole in their lives. And so they feel like their stuff is their memories, their photographs, their old newspapers and magazines they loved, their old clothes that they might wear in the future but evokes fond memories of the past. They hoard and it makes their life crazy. And, of course, then they can't invite anybody to their apartment or their house because they're so embarrassed. So it really takes a huge toll. That's the kind of thing that isn't so easily handled by yourself. That's the kind of thing maybe you would want to see a cognitive behavioral therapist. Just a thought. Again, as always, Google is the greatest source of information about stuff. So Google hoarding. There's videos for hoarders, all that stuff. And the last one is depression. A lot of people are disorganized because they are clinically depressed. They just can't motivate their holders like they walk around with this gray cloud over them. They may or may not get it, be as bad as can't get out of bed or even commit suicide. I had a client Friday who has written a suicide note to his son. He says, "I can't bear living in this place because of the environment. It feels hopeless. It's long beyond where we can turn things around, and I can't face the impact of global warming." And, you know, of course, that's his depression talking. You know, whether it's true or not that the computerized models that are predicting global warming, 2 degree temperature increase, it may be that the increased arability of previously frigid land may be a net good. Who knows? But it's certainly not a basis for suicide. So if you're feeling those kind of, if you're catastrophizing the negative too much, you may well want to see about dealing with the clinical depression. And of course, you know, this is my own bias. I've heard, obviously, if you have really severe depression, you've got to try therapy and very often drugs and maybe deep brain stimulation or whatever. But for the garden variety mild to moderate depression, maybe the most effective tool, and certainly without side effects, is exercise. Really make sure you exercise, as, you know, a couple of times. It doesn't have to be vigorous exercise. It could be a nice vigorous walk. But get that exercise multiple times a day. That can be the greatest antidepressant imaginable. And certainly if you're at that serious stage where you're just everything is black and you can't get out of bed and you're even thinking about suicide or you've tried suicide, please see a therapist. It's amazing that you may never be chipper. You're not going to be a Pollyanna. You're not going to be upbeat like my wife. Barbara Nemco is always upbeat. It's amazing. I'm never going to be like her. But you can take some of the edge off, and that's enough in order for you to make life worth living. This is a note from Joanne Marr, my board operator engineer. She wrote, "In a lot of cases, disorganization and clutter have become bad habits, almost like addictions. When it comes to breaking addictions and bad habits, it's not a simple matter of saying I'll do it tomorrow. They're unlikely to break habits on their own. They probably need outside help. Maybe a more disciplined friend or family member who can keep them on track." Quite reasonable. I think that's true. I think you start out on your own, do the best you can. And, yeah, the habits get so ingrained. And they may have psychological roots in your childhood and all the rest of it. So, yeah, the sequence of events is start by doing a little Google searching. Start by doing baby steps on your own. I've given you 12 different causes here of possible, reasons for your disorganization. If it doesn't work, yeah, start with a friend. You know, if that doesn't work, then, yeah, go the therapist route or whatever. So thank you, Joanne, as usual, for that. So if you are disorganized, somebody else is disorganized, and you want some either customized advice, or, as usual, we can talk about anything that is a work-related problem. If you or someone you love is suffering from a work problem, whether you're 16 or 76, whether you are a clerk or CEO, for-profit, non-profit, the one thing I can do is I can usually solve or at least help you take baby steps, often very significant steps, toward improving your work life. The bigger the challenge, the better I like it. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco, for what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And while we're waiting for the calls, one of the things that, you know, I love NPR's Garrison Keillor, who always says, "In Lake Wobegon, we live in a world in which everybody's above average." And most people think of themselves as, for example, above average drivers. And I just interviewed a guy for Psychology Today who said that 80% or whatever of people consider them above average drivers. Most people think of themselves above average in intelligence. Most people think of themselves as above average in productivity. Well, I developed a brief self-assessment to help you figure out how productive you really are and whether you want to be more or less productive. We'll get to that in a minute, though, but I want you, my dear callers, to be priority. So let's go to the phones. Welcome. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, 415-841-4134. That's the number here. Work with Marty Nemco and KALW, 415-841-4134. And let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi.
Hi, is that me?
It is.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
What I need help is some advice about how to organize and write a long book project.
Great.
I have to be my own boss. I've done the research. It's great. I have everything, except I don't know from writing classes how to go beyond a prompt and writing for 10 minutes.
Oh, boy, I know how to do that. Oh, boy, I've written 8 books. I love writing books. It comes like breathing to me. It's so easy. So not that it's going to be that easy for you, but you've come to the right place. I really feel like I can help you. Let's start with basics. We need to have the organizing principle. Do you have a title for the book or a theme for the book?
Yes.
What's the title?
Well, it's on animal consciousness and how we can look like Jane Goodall at our local animals and learn from them how to treat them and how to treat ourselves.
Okay, so what if we said, for purpose of just this conversation, if you're calling the thing, be your own Jane Goodall. Animal consciousness and how to make it part of your life. What if we said that's...
Oh, beautiful.
Okay.
Beautiful.
Okay, so that's where we start. That's a title. You know, everything flows from the title. It's like everything flows from a mission statement, right? We talk about... So there's the mission statement for your book. So I'm not saying you have to commit to this, but it's just a starting place. So now the next step is table of contents. If you had to have, let's say, 5 or 10 chapters... Do you know what the main topics are within that? They have to be somewhat discreet. Are they 10 anecdotes? Are they 10 principles? Are they 10? What would be the chapters in your book, or the main parts in your book? Is there? Well, maybe I'm making it too hard. Would your book have two or three different sections? So part one, part two, part three.
Possibly. I guess that's my section, my problem. I don't know which way to go because I don't have a doctorate. And
don't worry about that. I'm going to interrupt you. I don't care about whether you have a doctorate. What I care about is, is the notion of being your own Jane Goodall, is it going to be primarily are there a few key principles, or are there a few key anecdotes that you want to be the structural drivers for your book?
Question, should I take a memoir time-based form, or should I go by subjects? I have seen empathy. I have seen things that people don't
Oh, so this is a memoir. So this, okay. If this is a memoir, this is mainly about you. It's not a review of the literature. You're not talking about other people. It's what you did to get you to better understand animals and develop your relationship with animals. It's your own memoir about your being your own personal flavor of Jane Goodall. Is that correct?
Well, I would prefer to be the famous scientist saying, look what I discovered, and here are photographs, and here's research that other people have done.
That's not you, though. So it's you. It's not you. So the best way to do it, if it sounds like it's primarily memoirs, the insights you develop would be chronological. So you would have the first chapter be what was the first memory you had of where you were... had a special relationship with an animal. Tell me what it was.
Well, when I was totally paralyzed and from polio at three, and a dog, just a neighborhood dog, came down and knew how to do physical therapy.
Perfect. Okay, great. That's chapter one. Chapter one is polio and my dog.
Good.
Okay. Then, so your book is clearly going to be chronological. You're going to get this, and the second chapter is going to be the next key. There is a term called critical incidents. You want each chapter to be a critical incident, and then you tell that anecdote in one or two or three pages, and then you describe the implications of that for other people, for your reader. You tell the story first. This is chapter one. So the chapter one is me, polio, and whatever the doggy's name is, and you tell the story in a very entertaining way, and then you compelling way. And then you offer suggestions or implications for the reader. Then you go to chapter two, which is the next key incident in your life, and you do that for each of the chapters until you run out. And then you have a concluding chapter in which you bring together all the major principles that were embedded in the previous chapters. Does that make sense?
That makes perfect sense, and I especially like the giving me the 3 to 5 pages per section. I think that's what I keep spinning off and getting distracted and saying, well, this leads here and there and going, ending up, what is that Leacock phrase, jumping on my horse and riding off in all directions?
Right, and I don't want you to be limited. It could be, for a given story, you don't want to use one word less than is necessary nor one word more.
Right.
So an individual story could be a half page or it could be 8 pages. Don't worry about it, but it can't be 20. That I know. But you're going to tell the story in as much detail as necessary to be compelling. And that could, depending on the story, it's going to be somewhere between a half page and 8 pages. Don't let length constrain you. And one story could be, as I said, 1 page. In the second chapter, the story could be 4 pages. It's only you want to use as many words as is necessary and not one more. That's the model. Does that make sense?
That makes absolute sense. And God, and then I'll probably go and read some of your books, because I bet they'll have some, just reading them will be good for helping me have clarity. Well, at some point, though, I'm going to need to find a kindred spirit on the subject who can look it over and say, this I don't understand, this is boring.
Right, you don't want a kindred spirit. You want somebody who's not. You want somebody who's neutral, because somebody who is completely aligned with you is going to get it, and you want a broader readership to appreciate it. When I wrote my first books, I didn't show it to my first books were on education. I didn't show them to education experts. I showed them to a plumber. I showed them to some to a parent I want regular people to give me their feedback. Yes, you may need an editor. Most writers need an editor. So you need that. That's just to clean up your writing and maybe ask you a few questions. But in terms of do they get it, that's you want somebody who's peripheral to your central audience. Not, you don't want some physicist. A physicist is not going to be interested in your book. But somebody who's not necessarily an animal devotee, but who's human and it sounds like you've got the spiritual component in there or whatever. Find somebody like that, but is not necessarily an animal devotee. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. This has been just what I've been looking for 10 years. Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome.
And this organization also helpful so much. Thank
I appreciate you
so
calling work with Marty Nemko.
You
thank you. This is my mission in life. My dear listeners, if you have, this is what I, you know, I it's free. You know, and just because it's free doesn't mean it's useless. So if you've got a work-related problem of any sort, I can usually help. Harder the better, you know. To be honest, I'm a little bored from the usual garden variety, you know. I'm a middle-aged white male and I can't find a job. Now, help me. I can do that, but I've done it 1,000 times. Now, I need to, you know, whatever the problem is, really severe or really interesting, those are I'm particularly interested. 415-841-4134 is the number for work over here at KALW. Work with Marty Nemko. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi, I had a question about interviewing. I'm re-entering the workforce after a career break, and I really wanted to make sure that if I jump into a job and make this commitment that I'm not entering a toxic work environment or, frankly, just an environment where they are not hiring enough people, where they're having too high of expectations for productivity. I really want to keep my... because I have two kids, I really want to be able to keep the work environment and the work environment and home environment separate. And I just want, I don't know, I've had a bad experience before and then I had a great experience. So I just want to repeat the great experience again.
Two thoughts. First of all, you know, once a job is openly advertised, you really can't tell a lot of what the job is like. Even if you ask some good questions during the interview, very often the boss is going to say some things that are going to make the job sound great. You know, they often say a job interview is two people lying to each other. So I wouldn't go that route necessarily. I would start by telling every one of your friends what you want. And critical to ask for what you want in life. I love the Harvard orientation story. And a couple of years ago at Harvard, during the orientation tour for new students, the tour guide said the most important thing is ask for what you want, and if they say no, ask somebody else. So ask for what you want. You want a kind of a laid-back job, quote, not toxic, not that big a commitment was your term. You sound like you said your priority is your kids. Then tell all your friends, especially people who are stay-at-home moms or dads, to, you know, what you're looking for. They're going to be less turned off by it. You know, a hard-driving Silicon Valley type is going to say this person's commitment is to her kid, not to work. I'm not interested. So start with your friends, the people who would accept your value system, and they're more likely to screen out the wrong kind of jobs and screen in the right ones. That's number one. Number two, generally what you're saying, of course there are many men who do this, but you're sounding very stereotypically female, where the family is first, where toxic work environments, I've not heard many men use the term toxic work environments. Not wanting to make too much a commitment is very, very female-sounding stereotypically, while acknowledging there are many exceptions. Look for female-dominated workplaces in female-dominated fields. Fields like schools, social work, libraries, nursing. Those are fields where those values are more likely to be respected than in a high-powered Silicon Valley kind of operation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, thank you for calling. Again, phone number here, work with Marty Nemko. If you've got a work-related problem, this is an example of where you're going to get straight talk. One thing I don't do, I try as little as possible, is to fudge. I try to be as helpful as I can be and letting the chips fall where they may. And there are some people who don't like that. I got to live with the consequences. I don't like it, but I have to live with the consequences. You want a straight answer? I've been doing this a long time. I will give you my best shot, I promise. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemco. If you've got a work-related problem, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I'm going to take one more call, and then I'll go back to that productivity self-assessment thing, I promise. So let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Hi there, Marty. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to share a couple of observations after trying to organize myself for many years and get your feedback.
Great. Love it.
Okay. Well, a couple of things. One, thinking about this organization thing, there really are two major domains, it seems like. There's organizing your time, and then there's organizing your place.
Your stuff. Absolutely.
So When it comes to organizing time, I just want to share a couple things that have worked for me. Big, you know, ticket items. One is, the list that you said, you got to make a list every day or two or three or four and look at them every now and then. But a new tip that I got a few years ago was when you think something needs to be done, schedule it. Put it on, take this thing to the cleaners. Put all the little details that you really need to get done in the next 3 or 4 days, put them on a schedule somewhere in an hour somewhere out there. Maybe you move it. But it's there to be done, and it won't fall off the calendar.
Sure, I want to add that. I also have a sub-rule of that. If something takes less than 3 minutes, I do it right then. I don't put it on the list because it makes the list too long. I just, even if it's like, and people are always shocked at how quickly I answer emails. Very often I can answer an email in a minute. And so I will do it right then and there so it just doesn't pile up. Other than that, I agree with you.
Yeah. The other thing about place. And this was in reaction to the comment that you made from I didn't catch the name of the author, but someone who you said was a guru of organizational.
Julie Morgenstern.
She said, and I don't know her book or her works, but the little piece that you said about start in the corner of the room of which you use the most. I had another piece that I got from a PG&E organization specialist that really worked for me over the years, and that was really sort of the opposite. That at least in an office environment, start away from your workspace. Clean up the corner where you're going to put things and create space in your tool room or in your file cabinet, and then work your way back to where you work every day. Because now you'll have places to put things when you get closer and closer to your desk.
Yeah, I can see if the problem is a lack of space, I can see that. But I do think that Julie's right. We're going to be more likely to feel like we're more motivated to clean our entire apartment or whatever if we start with the space that we use the most, because we're going to see the benefit immediately of it, and that motivates us.
That's
why people don't often clean their basements or their garages, because they just don't. They're not there that much, and it seems it's enormous, you know?
Yeah, I have some countervailing feelings, but both of them, I think, work. There's something about that pile that's way out there in the basement that if you never get to, anyway, never mind.
Okay.
It's an idea to clean what you never otherwise would clean.
Well, I certainly appreciate your calling. Thanks very much for contributing to Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you.
Okay.
One more.
Okay, go ahead.
Just wanted to make sure that you don't, there's sort of a master class, and it's a whole new level that I just came upon, which is a New York Times bestseller. A lot of people know about it. It's called The Secret Method of Tidying Up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I've not read it. Tell me about it. Tell me.
It's sort of a whole other level of get rid of everything that's in your way and get down to the most important things that are in your life, and everything else will fall away.
I totally agree with that. I love this. I've often been very parsimonious. I hate stuff. Every time somebody gives me a present, it's like, oh, another thing. I don't need it. Really, living simply is awesome. It really does, and stuff does not enhance your life ultimately. I keep things very, very simple. Toss all that crap, all that clothes. I love that Mark Zuckerberg wears the same T-shirt every day, a dark gray T-shirt. He's got 12 of them. He doesn't mess around spending all his time shopping for clothes and, crowded closets and a million pair of shoes. You know, I couldn't agree more. It frees your life and your mind to do what's important. Same with relationships. I don't have 1,000 relationships. I have a couple of close relationships, and I like that a lot better.
Thank you, Marty.
Thank you. Appreciate it a lot. Okay, I can't resist. I love my callers. So I'm going to get, I promise I'll get to that, how productive are you, self-assessment, but let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help? Hello.
Hi. Are you? Is this my? Is this me? I'm Paul.
Hello, Paul. What's on your mind?
Hey. I have a question, and I decided to call because you were talking about books. I'm a gardener and a handyman. I build things, and my business is good. But I'm getting older, and I just got over very serious melanoma, which I was diagnosed with 5 years ago. And they told me, you know, you're not going to make it, but we're going to, you know, do everything we can. And so I didn't do anything they said, and I went to Germany, and I did a lot of alternative therapies. So now I'm writing a book about my experience because everybody wants to know, hey, what the heck did you do? Because I know someone that has melanoma, and I wanted to get some advice for you about, well, one of the questions I have is, because I'm looking for more as I'm older and my work is physical, even though I have a lot of work, I'm tired, and I'm looking for more ways to earn money, like writing a book. Well, that's my real question. You wrote 8 books, you said.
I did.
Can you make money writing
a
book?
No, absolutely not. But I would encourage you to write the book anyway, but I would encourage you to not just tell your story. That ends up being a little value. There are all these little anomalies, but I would encourage you to do is to write a book about people who had a death sentence from cancer and did not follow the standard advice and what worked for them. Having a separate chapter for each of those people is much more likely to be a book that will sell and maybe even sell a lot. You could, you know, there obviously are 1 in 1,000 books. First of all, out of every 1,000 books, 999 don't get published. They get written, they get sent to agents, they get sent to editors, they don't get published. And of those that get published, most of them sell 500, 1,000 copies. You could have made more money flipping burgers at McDonald's. That said, your topic is very important and is also a very high compelling interest to people who've got cancer. So, but don't make it this narcissistic, it worked for me, it can work for you. That's garbage. What isn't garbage is to do the research to find 10, 20, 30 people who, as I said, had stage 4 cancer or advanced melanoma or pancreatic cancer, you know, all those bad ones, and didn't do the traditional therapy, and they did various things. They didn't all go to Germany. They all did their thing, and they're now, you know, they passed their 5-year survival rate. That's a book, and a book that I would encourage you to write both for your personal gratification. You'll have wonderful conversations with these people. Your life will be tremendously enriched, and maybe you'll make money. Then get an agent. You know, what you do is tell your story in one chapter, send the chapter and a proposal, just one page proposal like I just described, to agents, especially agents that specialize in health-related books, and then see what happens. And at minimum, you've had a wonderful experience writing this book. If you're not a natural writer, then get some help, join a writer's group, whatever. But I think it's definitely worth doing. In terms of the standard, you know, the typical person who is working with his body his whole life and he's getting sick of it, the answer is to find a young kid right now, young kids who are scared to death of the job market. They may be college graduates, they may be high school dropouts, but they are scared of being perennially unemployed and being the cliche of staying at home, living with their parents, playing video games and getting high. And so find one of the, I would go to, for me, I would go to the head guidance counselor at a local high school and say, I'm looking for a kid who would like to be trained to be an excellent, not a $15 an hour guy, but eventually learn to run a business, who's a nice kid, who's an ethical kid, who's a hardworking kid, who may not be Mr. or Ms. Academic, who I can mentor and train. Who would you recommend? That's the kid you train to take over your business. If you don't have a family member, you won't take over the business. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, but I'm not sure how that makes me any money, but yeah.
Of course it makes you money, because instead of you being the guy who's putting in that irrigation system, he's doing it. He's watching you for a while, then you let him do more and more and more, and now you're making money off him. You're going to become the estimator. You're going to be the front guy. You're going to be training this guy to be doing the work that you don't want to physically do, which frees you up to make more money being the front guy and being a marketer.
Right.
Make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Thank you. That's good.
Okay, thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
All right.
I'm delighted that, of course, you survived the melanoma. Yes, you know, when you hear people with bad cancers after about stage 1 or maybe to stage 2, usually they torture you with all kinds of chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery, and then they got it, and then a year or two or three later, it comes back with a vengeance, and in the meantime, you've suffered huge discomfort from the surgery and the chemotherapy and the radiation, and you haven't had much quality of life. We haven't figured out the answer yet. Yeah, oh yes, we've come up with these new genetic approaches. It's still early. It's still early. I think with something like cancer, I would certainly look at complementary approaches and not just automatically accept the traditional approaches. Anyway, I can't resist. I got to take one more call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemkos. Your turn on the air. How can I help? Hi, it's you.
Hi.
Hi.
Radical Remission by Kelly Turner.
There you
go.
It's
a book about alternative cancer survivors.
And great. That guy should be reading that as well. And if he should then decide, do I need to write a book? Do I need to add on that? Do I need to collaborate with her? Or has it been done? It's a great call. I really appreciate you doing that.
Well, it's been done. It needs to keep being done. I'm a stage 4 cancer survivor and a part of a great support network. And it's unfortunately, I think males are undersupported and women get... I would like to see males get the same kind of support that I, as a female, have gotten. But Alta Bates Hospital and Sutter Health and Women's Cancer Resource Center and the wellness community in Walnut Creek are all great starter reference points.
Men have become the disposable sex. Men are really, there are 39 federal agencies for women's health, none for men. The amount of gender-specific healthcare research and outreach is enormous differential. Men are just encouraged to register for the draft.
Well, I want to see that change, and men are out there doing alternative therapies too. They may be less chatty than women are, ready to have their new best friend suddenly become these people that are total strangers. But Radical Remission is written by a woman. She interviews many men, and she's done her homework. There's a lot of stuff online that's kind of spotty, and she has cut through some of that crap.
Sounds great. I must say that the end. Yeah, I must say. I appreciate that. The anti-male thing is absolutely increased. The lie about the 79 cents women on the, I know careers. It's one thing I know. It's an utter lie that all these politicians are saying women earn 79 cents in a dollar. When you truly compare apples with apples, I know medicine. I teach at the medical school at UCSF. When you compare specialties, hours of work, amount of training, etc., women may pay the same, and in some cases more. For example, many more men choose to be surgeons. But the hours are irregular, the stress is enormous, the residencies are longer. So, of course, they're going to be paid more than a pediatrician or a general practitioner. And they're much more likely, even if they're working full-time, to work many more hours a week than the average woman. And that's not just opinion. There is unargued statistics. And yet the media and politicians are insistent on quoting this absolutely dishonest, women earn 79 cents in a dollar. It's just not fair. But it's accelerating. I mean, you listen to Hillary Clinton and you listen to Bernie, and you would think that women are completely being treated grossly unfairly. And while there are examples, really, men have become the disposable sex. The pendulum has, I cannot tell you. When I started out as a career counselor 30 years ago, my male clients and female clients, both younger and older, were roughly equally optimistic about their future. I swear. Way overwhelmingly, my female clients are far more optimistic about their futures. Men are dispirited, having much more trouble. The unemployment rate among men is, last I checked, it was a year ago, is higher than among women. The amount of disparagement in the media, the amount of depression and sadness. Do you know, it really killed me. I read the New York Times recently an article about the increase in the suicide rate. And they said that the amount of increase is growing among women. They buried the fact that men commit suicide at 3.6 times the rate of women. Yes, women's have come up a little bit, but why are they burying the fact that 3.6 times as many men commit suicide? Why do they bury the fact that 93% of workplace deaths occur to men? Men are the disposable sex, and the problem is the unfairness is accelerating, especially in the workplace. There are women's caucuses at work. Men could never be allowed to caucus. I have a client who works for a major corporation, and she's been invited to be. There's this Women in Leadership Caucus, and the men are not invited at all. There is something wrong here. There is something wrong here. All right. Now I'll go to the how productive are you? I'll tell you one more thing. I was on the White House Council to Council, the commission to create a White House Council on Men and Boys, right after the White House Council on Women and Girls, which is extremely heavily funded and spearheaded by Valerie Jarrett. And we have been, despite we are a group of 35 quite eminent men who wrote a very detailed proposal talking about the problems of boys and men. And we were stonewalled at every turn, and the White House Council on Women and Girls is absolutely huge and mega-funded. How productive are you really? I promised long enough I'm not going to let any more time go, the show will be over. Okay. I developed this brief self-assessment to help you decide whether you want to be more or less productive in your paid work, in your unpaid productivity outside the home, and in your unpaid productivity in the home. As I mentioned this topic earlier when I was promoting it, we all tend to think we're above average in everything. Driving, I recently interviewed a guy who said that most people think they're above average drivers. And most people, Garrison Keillor on talking about Lake Wobegon here on NPR, talks about that in Lake Wobegon, everybody, all children are above average. Most of us tend to think we're more productive than average. And I think these questions, it's seven questions, may help you make a more accurate self-appraisal and decide whether you want to be, you know, some people want to be less productive. I understand that, but this should be helpful to you. Paid work, number one, on average, how many hours per week are you actually doing productive work related to your paid work? Include work that you do at home for your job, for example, job-related reading or writing. Also include a second job if you have one. But don't count unproductive work time, like when you're staring at your computer but can't make yourself focus. Also, don't count volunteer or domestic in-home productivity. We'll talk about those later. But so on average, how many hours a week are you actually doing productive work? On the continuum, say, you know, fewer than 10 hours a week, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40, 40 to 50, more than 50. Question two. And it's not going to be a scoring. There's not going to be no scoring criteria here. It's just a chance for you to self-inventory. Compared with your coworkers on your paid jobs, rate the average quantity of work you produce. A, well above average. B, somewhat above average. C, somewhat below average. And D, well below average. Three, compared with your coworkers on your paid jobs, rate the average quality, not quantity now, of the work you produce. Well above average, somewhat above average, somewhat below average, and well below average. Four, compared with your coworkers on your paid jobs, rate how beneficial to society the work you do is, because that's clearly an important part of productivity. A, well above average. B, somewhat above average. C, somewhat below average. And D, well below average. Now let's turn to unpaid productivity outside the home. Question five. On average, how many hours a week are you actually doing productive work related to your unpaid work? For example, at a nonprofit, at a religious institution, helping a friend or relative with a task, but not on socializing or recreating. Do you do that more than 40 hours a week? 30 to 40, 20 to 30, 10 to 20, 5 to 10, fewer than 5? Question six. Rate how beneficial your volunteer efforts are to individuals, plus the ripple effects on society. It's a little more complicated, so I'll read it again. Question six, rate how beneficial your volunteer efforts are to individuals, plus any ripple effects on society. A, very beneficial. B, moderately beneficial. C, modestly beneficial. And D, minimally. And finally, unpaid productivity in the home. Question seven, on average, how many hours a week are you being productive at home? Parenting, helping family members, cooking, cleaning, necessary shopping, etc. A, more than 40 hours a week. B, 30 to 40 hours a week. C, 20 to 30 hours a week. D, 10 to 20. E, 5 to 10. F, fewer than 5. So now, take a moment to meditate upon your answers. Do you want to change how productive you are? More or less? If so, how might you do so? Okay. Let's take a call. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco. It's your turn on the air. How can I help?
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yes, that thing, what you said about people thinking that they're better than they are.
Right.
There was a show on the radio, it was either KLW or KQED, where they talked about what they called the Denning-Kruger effect, where they actually, it was like two professional psychologists who actually measured it. I guess if you Google Dunning-Kruger effect, which I was going to do, but I haven't done yet, would tell you all about that. Like, drivers who are poor drivers think they're much better than they are.
Absolutely. In almost every domain. You know, there was a study out of Cornell that found that most of the unintelligent people are too unintelligent to realize they're unintelligent.
Yes. And then another thing, what you said about that lie about women only making 79% of men, a couple of decades ago, there was some really left-wing auto mechanic who owned his own shop. He decided, since women only make X percentage of what men make, he's only going to charge women X percentage, you know, 79 or whatever the figure was at the time. And that only lasted until some man who didn't like it took him to small claims court.
Well, the whole problem, that this is a can of worms, that, you know, the whole issue of court and the suing about, it's so difficult to determine fairness.
Yeah.
You know, what is fair? Is an individual who's paid, you know, it's made me sad in the many of the workplaces, many companies are trying to make sure that there is parity across gender. I just think we need to, each individual, it's like, I want my pay as a career counselor or whatever not to be based on average. I want it to be based on my merit. Not all men are the same. Not all women are the same. I think this notion that we have to equate things according to some demographic characteristic is ultimately a formula for reducing everyone to the lowest common denominator and to objectifying characteristics. We can't objectify competence. Competence is a subtle thing. What I say to a client is a function of 1,000 things going through my head at one time. To try to, if somebody tried to assess my, to, if I was working for a company and they were trying to assess merit based on some averages, it loses the essence of what competence really is. It makes me very dispirited where we're headed here.
But okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. I'll give out the phone number one more time. Phone number at work with Marty Nemko. If you've got a work-related problem, I will try to help you no matter how hard it is. In fact, to be honest, the harder the better. 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I like to, in between calls, I like to offer little tips and things. And I think I've been remiss for a while. I haven't simply mentioned, I guess I mentioned a couple, but I haven't mentioned enough careers that I think are worthy of consideration, especially as I think about the KLW listenership that is very nonprofit-centric. Fundraiser is one of the best careers for a typical KELW kind of listener. Many of my listeners are not highly technical. They're not going to be super computer programmers or biotech PhDs or physicists, but they're very committed to certain causes. And where the money is in fundraising in nonprofits is in fundraising, because in almost any job, if you're bringing in the money, they're going to pay you more. And fundraisers come in three flavors. There are the pitchers, who hit up the rich people and companies. There are the infrastructure people, who, for example, develop dossiers. They're called prospect researchers, who develop psychographic dossiers on rich people and companies to figure out how the pitchers should make their pitch. There are event planners, the third category, and also those who keep records. There's lots of very sophisticated software that keeps track of all the donors, including calculating how much they should pitch for the next time. People who know how to keep those records are, you know, will find themselves with jobs. And then there are the event planners. They tend to be the least paid because they're not directly putting in the money, bringing in the money. They're actually a cost center. Event planners stage the fundraising events like the galas, the auctions, all that kind of stuff. So fundraising, particularly for a KLW listenership, is something that you may want to consider. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. Make it brief because we are almost running out of time. How can I help?
Yeah, this is Sam. What would you do with a government agency that doesn't, for example, you apply for a permit, they say, no, you cannot have a permit. They say, but the rule book says you can. They say, oh, we might change it in the future. Things like that, you know, like there is priority list. They push people on the front and push people to the back. And you have contract with them for 28 years. And this dishonor their own contract. And the lawyers don't dare to sue a government agency.
What do you really think is the reason? Why have they, after 28 years, what is the real reason you think they pushed you to the back?
Well, for example, we have a contract that if you work without any benefit, medical, vacation, sick leave, anything, then at the end of the road, when you are too old and fragile, then you get something like a taxi cab medallion that is going to help you maybe $1,000 a month, like a retirement. And it has been done for 20, 25, 30, 35 years. But then when this government agency takes over, they say, no, we are going to wipe it out. And lawyer after lawyer, they don't dare to sue the city.
So let me try to understand. So you were a government employee, now you're a little older, and they...
No. I'm a self-employed, like thousands of other self-employed.
So you're a cab driver. You own a medallion cab driver, and now refuse... Why are they refusing to... They're refusing to renew your medallion now? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they refuse to issue the medallion.
Right. Isn't that because they want to keep people out of their cars? The transportation commissions are very eager to get fewer people driving cars. Is it that they're reducing the number of medallions for that reason? They believe that it's a worthy thing to do for the environment?
No, it's just they want to suck as much money as they want. You know, for the permit, for example, that's every business. You are a carpenter, whatever you are. You get for free, they want $250,000. Even when they promise you can have it if you play by the rule and wait for it and work on the industry for 20, 15 years.
I wish I could give you an answer, Mike. The show is over. There is no question that government does a lot of good, but it also is very avaricious in trying to get as much money as they can from folks, and it is very labyrinthine and it is impenetrable. I wish we could end on a more positive note, but I must end the show. I can only say, as a human being, I feel for you. That's just kind of a puerile answer, but that's all I can say. Anyway, that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and, of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers. And do you know how to be resilient? Plus, I promise I'm going to spend more time talking about some careers that I think are wise to consider, especially for you, my listeners, who I think I've gotten to know over these 26 years. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.